This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Behind home plate, we bringing it to them all day. You know what's up, welcome to Birdland. Win or lose, we bringing it to you always. You know what's up, welcome to Birdland. Orange or black, we rebuild the pack. No matter where we at, you know we coming back. Section 336, we on this, so tune in. You know what's up, welcome to Birdland. Yeah, yeah, welcome to Birdland. You know what's up.
Come the boys from Section 336.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, Baltimore sports fans of all ages, welcome to Section 336, next generation of Baltimore sports talk. I am your dearly centering host, Matt Sroka. As always, I'm joined by the button lover, Josh Sroka.
Hey, Matt, how you doing?
Good, good, good. Josh, what were your thoughts yesterday when it was 4th and 19 with about 30 seconds left? You're on the 20-yard line. You have no timeouts. What was going through your head? Did you turn the game off? Did you say this to Lamar Jackson? Anything can happen?
I was – where was I? I was resigned that it was a tough loss. I was resigned on the loss being on Brown. And then when the ball – when once I saw that Jackson had time and kind of made some time, extended the play, I got over to the edge of my seat. And then when that ball went up in the air, I stood up. And then when Watkins caught it, I think I was doing the same thing you were doing, yelling at him to get out of bounds, because I was sure we were going to blow it on a penalty and end the game there. Now, thankfully, the refs didn't call that delay of game penalty. And, I mean, I just was excited that we had a chance for Tucker to attempt a field goal. I had no thought of him making it. I thought it was just going to be fun, and he was going to miss it. I was resigned. We lost the game.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that 4th and 19 was insane, and then the kick was even more insane. I remember watching, you know, the NFL Red Zone and seeing – And what was
so does that mean you already turned the game off? You went over to the red zone?
No, this is earlier, like during halftime or something. Oh, okay. On my phone. I just had the red zone on my phone. And I saw, I don't know, it was the Jaguars guy. No, the guy for the Cardinals kick it.
Yes.
They go for like a 67-yarder.
Yeah.
And the guy ended up catching and returning it back for a touchdown.
Yes.
So I was thinking about that. But then I was, when Sammy Watkins got out of bounds, I really wasn't thinking about that. I didn't know what to do. Like, at that point, I wasn't even thinking get out of bounds, because I still was thinking.
Get in field goal range.
Well, this game's over. Like, I still was like, whatever. Okay, good. You got the first down. But yeah, like, that's a tough one, because do you want to get as many yards as possible, or do you want to get out of bounds? And if he would have ran out of bounds and ran back a yard or two, like, that field goal would have been no good.
But if he ran out of bounds, you probably got another playoff.
So you maybe
got 10 yards.
Yeah, but there's no guarantee you get yards there either.
There's no guarantee of anything.
Yeah. And then the field goal itself, I thought, well, the second he kicks it, I believe it's Justin Tucker, puts his arms up or something, and then it looks straight. So you know it's straight enough.
Yeah.
The only question is it's going to be long enough?
Which was weird, because the earlier field goals, he missed one, and they all kind of hugged the line.
Yeah.
So to see that one, yeah, that was my first reaction, was it's dead center.
Yeah, sometimes I feel like field goal kicking is too easy for Justin Tucker, you know? So he needs to challenge himself every now and then with, like, these 60-yarders. And then once it doinked, I thought, oh, he missed it, but what a heck of an effort. And then I saw the ref put his arms up, and I was like, oh, my gosh, it actually went through.
Even when I thought it went through, I did the same thing, looked to the refs, because I'm like, did that go through? I think it went through.
Yeah, I didn't think it did go through. I thought it bounced the other way, but... and so now today the whole narrative changes, right? From Marquise Brown can't catch to what an incredible win.
But it's Monday.
Yeah.
Immediately tomorrow, the questions about Marquise Brown come up again.
Yeah. I mean, Marquise Brown is a
in-house. They'll be dealing with that.
Yeah. I mean, he's not going away. It's not like we got a bunch of receivers lining up to take his spot, right? So he's our guy.
We got a guy on the IR or IL or whatever the football calls it. IR. They're still IR.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Yeah, I mean, Marquise Brown has had two great games to start the season.
Right.
And still, like, Marquise Brown has a unique ability. He's a number one guy, and he's still getting consistently open. And he'll catch the ball in the future, so I'm not worried about Marquise Brown.
But here's the problem with Marquise Brown.
There's no problem with Marquise Brown.
But here's the problem with Marquise Brown.
There's no problem.
The problem is he's our number one.
It's like
John Means with the Orioles. He's our ace.
Yeah.
Is he an ace on another team? No.
I think maybe some teams. Ace. Yeah.
A star number one receiver makes big catches.
Yeah.
Doesn't drop three touchdowns in a game.
Yeah. I mean, it was a bad game. There's a lot of players who had bad games.
I know it was a bad game for him, but games like that are why we haven't seen the consistency out of Brown to put his name up there with the big receivers.
Yeah. I mean, he's had consistency issues.
And this is his third season, right?
Yes.
So
two and a half. Last year was weird, but yeah, this third season.
Yeah. But this is where you need to see him take that step.
Yeah. And the first two games he did.
And if Bateman comes up and Bateman has that rhythm with Lamar, you're going to see that affect the amount of balls that Brown gets.
Hey, maybe. I'm excited about that Bateman Brown.
Oh yeah, me too.
Combo. I think it's two exciting receivers.
And I thought it was exciting to. My mind just blanked. The tight end that he finally started getting into.
Yeah, Mark Andrews.
Andrews. I was excited that Andrews got into the rhythm of this game where he's been quiet the first couple games.
Yep.
Now, part of that is we didn't run the ball.
Yeah.
12 running back handoffs for the whole game.
Yeah, I mean, and part of that, too, was that's an interesting decision, right, because I thought the opposite would happen against such a bad team.
Yes.
But their secondary for Lions is beat up and is bad. And we were getting wide receivers open all day. Like, if receivers catch the ball.
Yeah.
One receiver catches the ball, it's a blowout. So
and Lamar Jackson.
You understand it.
For all the talk about Lamar Jackson's arm. And Lamar Jackson isn't a passer. Lamar Jackson looked good yesterday.
Yeah.
His stats should have been a lot better if it weren't, except for Brown.
Yeah. Almost all of his deep balls were right on point. Yeah.
Yeah. He had one that was a little long.
Yeah.
And you never know on those long balls what happens to the wide receiver.
Was that the one you're talking about, the one of Mark Andrews at the end zone?
Yes.
And that was the play was breaking down a little bit. And
exactly.
There's a little bump in.
That bump in will cause you a step. But yeah, no. Really good, really impressive on the run, throwing the ball.
Yeah, like he looks good as a passer.
We talked about how last week that little jump throw looked like a Mahomes move that he did.
Yeah.
Similar stuff here where you're seeing him on the pass, on the run, getting out of the pocket when the pocket collapses, avoiding guys, missing, causing guys to miss tackles, and still looking downfield and passing the ball. That was impressive. And it's always exciting to have Lamar Jackson on your football team.
Oh, yeah. You're never out of the game, and the game's always exciting. There was my favorite tweet was someone tweeted, you know, a video of Lamar Jackson throwing that kind of awful interception at the end of the game. And the comment was like, you don't see Mahomes make throws like that. And then the first comment was Mahomes throwing an almost identical interception in the Chargers game that same day. These quarterbacks aren't perfect.
Right. And you get that.
And because, Lamar Jackson is playing really well this year.
Right. Yeah. And you get that because when everything's going your way, you get a little excited and think, oh, I can squeeze it into this hole.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mahomes does that. Mahomes had, I believe, had multiple interceptions yesterday. He does it.
Yeah. He had at least one. Yeah.
Yeah. He's having he's not having the best year so far.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's a long season and
long season.
Quarterbacks. Yeah. Are going to make mistakes, but yeah, you have to be happy with what you've seen from Lamar Jackson so far this year. You have to be.
Yeah. And I mean, it'll be interesting to see the Broncos this coming weekend. We go to Denver, which is always tough to travel. We saw the traveling to Las Vegas and we didn't really have our rhythm. Hopefully traveling to Denver, we do. And it'll be fun to go back to memories of the Mile High Miracle.
Yep. I mean, on if you just look at, I mean, I don't know, we don't have to do a whole preview, but I mean, I just look on paper about what's happened the first 3 weeks of the season. And I know Denver hasn't played great opponents,
but they've won. Who cares?
But they've won in dominating fashion, unlike us. Right. And I think, I mean, this game has me nervous. I think that they could take it to us.
I agree. I think I would have liked to see us play the Lions better. Now, again, it comes down to one guy. If Brown caught those three passes, it's the game to blow out.
Sure.
So that's tough, but I do like to see that the team – I like to see that this team – there's no division. This team is one. This team is all about themselves. It's they're going to battle together. I think of the Cobb Bowler years, the Joe Flacco year, even – Joe Flacco years, they came together somewhat, but even Joe Flacco had this division of offense versus defense. And all the defense has to bail out the offense, or the offense has to bail out the defense. And you don't get that right now with the Lamar Jackson Ravens. They are all, from special teams on, they are all on the same page and all cheering each other on. And it's exciting.
Yeah, and then you see, I've said it before, but the Ravens on Twitter, they're better than everybody, and they're so good and so supportive, and they all came out, obviously,
the Ravens
after Sunday's game, Ravens players.
Yes.
Talking about Justin Tucker. Even there was a tweet by Tony Lombardi, who was like, no one's happier for Justin Tucker than Marquise Brown, to which Marquise Brown quote tweeted kind of and said, for real, I loved JTT. He's the GOAT. Mistake's going to happen.
Yep.
And that sounds different, right?
Because Lombardi's not going to say anything except for something negative.
Right, and that was...
That's his favorite thing to do on the internet, is to be negative. So to see Brown spin it and come out like that is fun. It's great.
Right. And it's interesting, too, because it's Brown who... kind of his first year, I guess it was his first year, gotten a little bit of hot water because he was, I think, complaining about but his number of looks he was getting, the number of balls thrown his way, where he doesn't seem to be that kind of guy this year.
About being soldiers. What's the point of having soldiers on your team if you're not?
Yeah, you don't use them. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Now everyone seems to be on the same page, and so I agree. This team has a really good feel to it, but I don't know if the injuries are going to be too much to overcome. I think time will tell.
And part of it is I feel like the injuries have brought this team together. The injuries, the four COVID guys this past week, it all brings this team together. Where it's like, yeah, we lost four starters on our defense. So, yes, our defense is going to not be so good. But the team came together and found a way.
Yeah, in addition to the other injuries.
Yes. Yeah. The fact that our running backs, we only gave it to them 12 times because it looks like they just picked up a bunch of guys off the street because that's what they did.
Yeah. All right.
That's the most Ravens talk we've done this year.
Yep. Oh, we'll have some more of that in the Portals off season, but we have one last week of Orioles baseball here to enjoy or to endure, whatever word you want to use here.
To observe.
Yeah. To watch, you know.
Final three home games against Boston.
Final train wreck.
You going to any of these games Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday against Boston?
No, I have no plans to.
All right.
And I've seen enough games in person.
All right. Then they finish the series out in Toronto, or finish the season with the series in Toronto. So six games. Right now, the Orioles are 50-106. So, yeah, I kind of scratching 2020 because 2020, they went 25-35. It's hard to judge the team off 60 games.
Right.
But do you think that this team is better this year than 2019?
Yes, I do.
All right. The 2019... won 54 games. So we need to win four out of the next six to tie the 2019 team.
Mm.
Is this team better than the 2018 team?
Yes, absolutely. Well, that was the total kind of collapse. So
that's
yes.
When I would say the rebuild started.
Yeah. I mean, that team had more talented players, but
2018 was for the
first half.
Year.
Yeah. So for the first half, we were super talented players.
Yeah. Do you know how many wins we got in 2018?
Oh, where we were like 54?
47.
Oh, 47 is that 47. Bad? Oh, okay.
So we are better than 2018. We have a chance of being better than 2019. I found 2017 interesting. Do you know what our record was in 2017?
No, what was it?
75-87.
Yeah.
Do you know what place that put us in the AL East?
I would say maybe ahead of the Red Sox. So, yeah.
The Red Sox won the division in 2017.
Oh, that's they won the division? They go back and forth to finish in last place to the division. Yes,
that was an odd number, so they won the division.
Well, in 2019, well, last year they finished last.
Yeah, the evens, they finished last.
Yeah. I don't know. Fourth? Third?
Last place.
Okay, last place.
75 wins and last place.
Yeah, sounds
so
right.
So we've been last place for a while.
And that would be again this year, right? If we won 75 games, we'd be in last place again this year.
Correct. Yeah. So whether it's 75 or 54, or now we have a chance to win 56, I mean, we're going against Boston and against
Toronto.
Both playing for playoff spots. So my guess is that we'll be lucky if we get to that 54 number.
Yeah. You know what's interesting though, and that Bus Joni always forgets to tweet this out, but the context here,
he loves to hate the Orioles.
Yeah. But if you look at the Orioles this year, I just found it. Yeah. Thanks for Bob Phelan for tweeting this out a couple of days ago.
Oh, he's the best with stats.
He said, also, I'm taking his word for it. He said, I didn't learn that today. What's that?
I learned today that he's a mailman.
Oh, is he?
Yeah. I didn't know that. Apparently, if you deliver mail, you have a lot of downtime that you can just tweet minor league stuff.
Well, this is major league related. The Orioles are 18-52, at least when this was tweeted out on the 24th.
Yep.
The Orioles are 18-52 against the AL East, 31-52 against everybody else. So all of a sudden, if you're 31-52, that's bad, but it's not. Buster Olin is not tweeting about you every week.
Right.
But 18-52 against the AL East. I mean, you don't like to talk about it, but this is the uneven schedule where you're playing the Red Sox, the Blue Jays,
yeah,
the Rays, the Yankees, all the time. And these are all really good teams, and no other division has to do this because other divisions have more than one bad team. They don't have four great teams like they do here in the AL East. So
three out of the four in our division are going to go to the playoffs. And there's a good chance, well, no, only three can go. But there's four of them fighting for the division right now.
Yeah, they're all well over 500, all playing, fighting for that spot, yeah.
So it's like, it's they're all up there.
I mean, they all could end with with 90 wins, right? Well over 90 wins.
Right.
It's just wild. And another thing to kind of support this argument, I mean, the reason our record's so bad this year, it's no secret, it's because of our pitching, right? Our pitching is really bad. Our pitching, our team ERA this year, right, if you believe in ERA as a stat, 5.183. That's worst in baseball, 5.183. But again, if you go and look at it through, it's the reason that stat is the way it is because we play the AL East and they all have great offenses. So our ERA is 5.83, but against Boston, our ERA is 6.60. Against Tampa Bay, we play Tampa Bay a lot. Our ERA against Tampa Bay is 7.69. Mm-hmm. We average giving up almost 8 runs a game to the Tampa Bay Rays. Yeah. And you think that's a lot, but then you look at the Blue Jays, who our team ERA against the Blue Jays is 8.21. We give up over 8 runs a game when we pitch against the Blue Jays. So just like that,
Does that hurt? Is that part of now? It's a chicken and egg situation. Is that why the Orioles are so bad? Or is that why all four of these teams are fighting for the postseason? Because they get to play the Orioles.
Yeah, well, that's part of it. But the kind of unfair thing for them is they all face us the same number of times, right? So it's not like any team has a unique advantage in that.
You're right. And they all have to face each other as well. So,
well, and it's why
they're facing each other more.
It's why, I don't know, I think we're only like 3 games under 500 against the Yankees or 4 games under 500 against the Yankees this year,
right?
Which is why if the Yankees don't make the playoffs, they'll have the Orioles to thank because everyone else kind of crushed us. But the Yankees, for whatever reason, haven't crushed us this year like the other teams.
Yeah. The MLB app confuses me with their standings.
Yeah.
Because they say that Toronto's elimination number is 6. But they say Boston, New York, and Tampa don't have an elimination number.
Okay.
So if Toronto's elimination, I guess they're saying like, I guess every day that would go down by one. So Toronto, they're saying Toronto's got to win all six or they're eliminated.
Yeah, I guess so.
I'm confused because you would think if Toronto wins one and Boston loses, that there would be an elimination number for Boston.
Yeah, I don't know. It was interesting. I think John Boy was talking about, he had a tweet about the scenario where there could be a five-way tie for the wild card.
Okay, so that might be it.
And Jeff Passan tweeted out a much more reasonable kind of three-team tie scenario in the wild card. So and the Orioles are going to have a lot to say about this because you have all these teams, the A's, the Mariners, the Red Sox, the Yankees, the Blue Jays, all bunched there. And we play the Red Sox and then we play the Blue Jays. So we're going to have a lot to say. So right. I'm hoping to sweep the Red Sox and, you know, let's see what happens against the Blue Jays.
Yeah. And then just root for Seattle against New York
in there. Yeah.
And try to get New York and Boston out of this mix. But you're right. It could very easily come down to the Yankees, Red Sox, and Blue Jays all tied for wild card spots.
Yeah. So it's going to be a crazy last week of the season.
Yeah.
So let's hope for a 2011 replica, right? To end the season on a high note, spoiling someone's playoff chances, propelling us into a 2012 playoff run.
Yeah. Buckle up too.
Yeah. So that's what I'm rooting for.
I got Monday Night Football on.
Yeah.
Prescott just fumbled the ball in the end zone and gave up a touchdown.
Oh, yikes.
I haven't seen anything like it. He came back and the ball knocked it out of his hand and the Eagles just grabbed it.
Oh, yikes. That's a whole weird division.
That's a weird division of bad teams.
Yeah, I never know. You never know about any of those teams.
No, they all think they're getting better and then it's just bad teams.
Hey, you know who I think is getting better every year, but then I don't know. Maybe he's tricking me.
Who?
Austin Hayes.
Austin Hayes is having a great year. I'm very happy with Austin Hayes' year.
Yeah. If you look at Austin Hayes' stats, his splits, at first, it's really interesting to look at. Like, over his career, he's by far played his most games in September. 79 games he's played in September.
Because he gets that September call-up.
Compared to 41 in August, to 28 in July, 19 in June, 19 in May. And because he's always injured, too. And he's healthy by the time the season gets to the end. And then his numbers, again, show that he's a much better player in September. In September, throughout his career, he's batting .295, OBP of .342, 16 home runs over 79 games in September. So he's always been, his entire career, a great player in September. The problem is he's never shown to be kind of a great player every month of the year,
right?
Just a great September. But another good month of September for Austin Hayes, making you think that maybe he's the answer in the outfield.
Well,
I don't know. I'm not convinced. Are you convinced that Austin Hayes is the answer in left field, Josh?
I'm more convinced than I was to start the season. But it might be more of other people have disappointed me.
Yeah.
That I don't know. I'm still concerned about his injuries. He played 125 games this year, which is way better.
Yep.
Means he missed 25 games, or 35, something like that, which is way better. But that's still concerning. You can't have a star player that misses a quarter of the season.
Yep. This is looking like by far the best year of his career. His baseball reference WAR number is 2.7, by far the best of his career. So you have to be happy with the way Austin Hayes has played, especially late in the season. And there seems to be, you're right, there seems to be, a lack of people stepping up to fulfill some of these holes. Like we talked about at the beginning of the season, this is a big year for DJ Stewart.
Yeah.
This is a big year for Yusniel Diaz. This is a big year for Anthony Santander. All of them have underperformed this year. Austin Hayes, I don't know if Austin Hayes has overperformed, but at least he's performed well enough to make you feel like, okay, I got my center fielder, I got my left fielder. I don't know about the rest, but at least we got that going for us.
You're right. And Cedric Mullins, I'm ready to keep him in.
Yeah.
I'm bought in that it wasn't a fluke in April.
You don't want to trade him now? His stock's high. His stock will never be higher. You get a nice return for Cedric Mullins right now.
Do you think his stock will never be higher? That's the question. That's the question whenever anyone has a great year.
Yeah.
Will his stock be higher? Because this is his first year without switch hitting. What happens when he actually focuses on it more? I don't know.
I tell you what, it was props to Cedric Mullins. This week he got, you know, his 30th home run.
Yeah.
After a little bit of shenanigans where he had 30 like 2 weeks ago where he hit the foul pole, but they didn't give it to him. Also, I don't know if this was – we didn't talk about this last – I think this was 2 weeks ago. Maybe we talked about it here. I don't remember. But he had one of the greatest catches I've ever seen in my life, climbing the wall in center field.
Yeah, that was this past week, I believe.
Yeah, I think that was 2 weeks ago. But Bird, I think, distracted us. But anyway, that was a great catch. If you look at the list, though, Josh, of 30-30 guys, 30 home runs, 30 stolen bases, yeah, the 30-30 club – since 2013, there's only been one, two, three, four other guys who've done it. Mike Trout, Jose Ramirez, Mookie Betts, Ronald Acuna Jr., and Christian Yelich. That's it. That's the list. And now Cedric Mullins is on that list. Cedric Mullins is in some pretty elite company there.
Yeah, I didn't realize at first how impressive it was because I thought, well, surely Brady Anderson did that in the 90s. And I look and it's like, no. He never got close to that.
Yeah.
He had that one year, he had the steroid year with 50 home runs, but he only got 21 stolen bases that year.
Yeah.
And he had years where he passed 30 stolen bases, but never that high. Do you know, this is a stat that when I was looking at Brady Anderson's career, because I thought, oh, everyone's mistaken. Brady Anderson did this. In 1992, he got 21 home runs. But do you know how many stolen bases he got?
Is this the most of his career?
Yeah.
Most of his career, he got 21 home runs. I would say he got, did he get 40 stolen bases?
He got 53 stolen bases.
53. Yeah, I forgot about that.
I remember the Orioles being fun there. But to have a guy get 53 stolen bases would be a lot of fun. You're talking almost every game. That's fun on the base paths.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. You think there's 162 games. Some games you don't even get on base. So it's like almost every time you're on base, you got to be running.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, let's put it 92. All right,
I feel like, I mean, that's kind of Ricky Henderson time, too. I feel like there was this time where, even like Roberto Alomar, when he was here, I feel like stole a bunch of bases. I feel like there was a time, I just don't think you steal as many bases right nowadays. I don't know what the stats are, but I feel like stolen bases are done as much.
You're right. I bet it's the analytics. I bet it's the having the note card in your pocket about every batter, every base runner, and knowing all those stats. I think baseball is harder to play as the years go on, not because the game changes, but the prep for each player changes.
Well, they were trying some stuff in the minor leagues this year where you could only throw over two or three times, and so there was a lot more stolen bases. Josh just froze. It's probably me who's frozen, not Josh. I mean, if there's an internet problem, let's face it, it's probably here on my end. Should I refresh it or not? I want to play a game here with Josh called Guess the Pitcher. Got some relievers on the Orioles team right now that I'm pretty sure Josh won't be able to get.
I'm here.
You're here?
I don't know what my computer decided to like reboot something. I was rewinding my computer before the podcast. That's a good idea. And now it's decided that my camera that I used has decided that it just doesn't want to play, so it kicked me off.
Well, it's frustrating doing a podcast with the co-host who can't get his technology together. That's all I gotta say.
I know. We gotta get that straightened out.
Yeah. I know. I'm glad. It makes me happy that there's technological problems and I'm not the cause. It always makes me happy.
It's all good. So what's going on in the minors?
No, before we get to the minors, can we play a little game? Hey, did you know? Hold on. Let me count. Josh, first of all, take a guess, and then I want to play a game with you. How many players do you think on our 40-man roster, how many players do you think are on the IL, either 10-day or 60-day DL?
More or less than Raven players. I would think we keep putting, I'd say 20.
We have 11.
11. All right. So it's less than Ravens.
Our 40 man's like 49 players or something, because every time you put someone on the 60-day DL, you can call someone else up.
No, I know it's been, it also seems to be like it's been that type of year and a tough year. So it's like if something starts to act up, it's I'm done for the year.
Yeah. Hey, so let's play a little quiz game here, Josh, all right?
All right.
Are you familiar with the 90s sitcom called Wings?
All right, yes, I am familiar with Wings.
All right, I'm going to drop some names.
It's got a Monk in it. The guy who went on to do Monk is the taxi driver.
Yes,
and
yes.
And the guy with blonde hair is one of the pilots.
Yes. So I'm going to ruin this game. I'm going to say a name.
That's about as much as I remember of Wings.
I'm going to say his name, and you got to tell me, was this a character? Like, is this name a character on Wings?
Okay.
Or is this an Orioles reliever?
Oh, I've got this. This is an easy game. Is this a game going around on the internet?
No, this is just a game I made up just right now.
And you chose Wings that used to be on the USA Network.
Yeah, because okay. I was trying to think of an old show, and I always like Wings, so I go with Wings.
I like this Wings, especially since any millennial has no clue what we're talking about.
Yeah. Now, your Wings knowledge might be a little bit too good for this game.
All right. I used to watch Wings a lot. I think it was on USA Today, like or USA Network every day or something. I remember watching a lot of Wings, but at this point, I don't remember anything about it. All for bringing Wings back. Let's do a remake of Wings.
All right. So this is, I'll not just relievers, I'll do any Orioles players. All right.
Which I think was just like trying to copy Cheers, but at an airport.
Exactly.
So
Wings player or reliever, Joey Kreibel.
Joey Kreibel?
Yeah.
Joey Kreibel. That's a Joey Kreibel is from Wings.
Incorrect. He is an Orioles reliever. Number 87 picked him up from Tampa Bay. I don't know if I'm saying his name correctly. Kreibel. I don't know. But he is an Orioles pitcher.
I got one wrong. A bad way to start. Yeah. Bring it up. Let's go.
Bud Bromsky.
Bud is from Wings. I know Bud.
All right. Here's another one. Wings or Orioles reliever? Roy Biggins.
Roy Biggins is also from Wings.
All right, here's another one. Wings or Orioles reliever? Brooks Krisky.
That's an Orioles reliever.
Yeah. Did you know that one?
I knew he wasn't from Wings.
All right, here's another one. Wings or Orioles relievers? Eric Hanhold.
I know Eric Hanhold. He is a Baltimore Oriole. I've seen him pitch in some games.
All right. Let me see. All right, here we got two more. Right. Wings or Orioles player? Lowell Mather
is from Wings.
Yep.
But he sounds like an Orioles pitcher. He sounds like a pitcher.
Yeah, there's a little bit of Zach Lothar going on there with him.
Yeah, maybe that's what I was hitting with.
I don't know how to say this guy's
name. And a little
Lowell
Melser.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know exactly how to say this guy's name, but let's go with Nick Cioffo.
He's an Orioles pitcher.
Well, yeah, he's actually Orioles catcher, but yeah, he's the third string catcher they brought up.
All right.
But they got some, like, I saw Joey Kreibel in the game the other night. It's like, Joey Kreibel, this is not, what is happening? And then I looked at the roster, Brooks Krisky, never heard of this guy either.
I like the game. That's a good game. Wings or Oriole.
Yeah.
I like that. That's a little bringing a little Burt's game time back to 336. We'll have to do some more stuff like that.
Yeah, but I mean, it's crazy. I mean, you have, especially the pitchers. I mean, you have Keegan Aiken on the IL now.
Yeah.
We joined Matt Harvey, Hunter Harvey, Travis Dickens Jr., Jorge Lopez, Tanner Scott, Tyler Wells was now added. Bruce Zimmerman should come off. He's still on there, but he should come off tomorrow, I believe.
He's supposed to pitch tomorrow night.
But yeah, the list is kind of silly with all those pitchers on the IL. And of course, position players, GJ Stewart's now on the 60-day DL, along with Jorge Mateo, along with Ramon Arias. And 60-day DL at this point could mean a week, right? They just want to give them off the 40 man so they can bring someone up. So they're going to have, you're going to see, Josh, this offseason, and we'll talk about it later. But a ton of, because right now our 40 men is something like 48 guys.
Right. And they're going to have to clear that up before the Rule 5 draft, because they're going to have some guys they want to save.
They're going to have some guys they want to save. And presumably, a Rule 5 guy or two that they want to also join the roster. Yep. So there's going to be a whole bunch of guys option to the minors who are going to have to clear waivers and stuff. So I think it's going to be pretty interesting to see.
You're right. That's going to be interesting.
How that works out.
Yeah. You see Michael Elias talking about Adley and Grayson Rodriguez and saying that they've proven themselves in the minors, that they'll both get big league camp invites.
Yeah.
And he didn't rule out the shot of them both making the major league team, which I think is partly what you got to say. But I think it's also
is Josh. Isn't this the same guy who said in 2019 or 2020, if we're in a playoff run, you could see Adley Rutschman caught up in 2020? Isn't that the same guy?
Yes, it is. Yeah. But so that's where I feel like it's part of it is you got to say the right thing. But I also see it as also evaluating and saying maybe we do want to roll this team next year. If we make the right veteran moves, bring in some pitching, maybe you do say, hey, let's see what Grayson can do. Let's see what Adley can do. They've proven enough. So wow. I think even Mike Elias is torn with the idea of bringing them up or making them wait more time in the minors.
Yes. I think those guys, Adley and Grayson, would be fine in the majors right now. Like, you call them right now and they'd be fine, right? Like, I don't think they're going to – I don't think Adley Rutschman's going to get to the majors. I mean, Adley Rutschman has been super successful at every single level. Like, you see it sometimes. You've seen it with Gunnar Henderson. You've seen it with Jordan Westberg. Some of these young players, when they jump a level, they, like, don't play as well for a while, and then they get it going. Yep. That's not the case with Adley Rutschman or Grayson Rodriguez. They jump a level, and it's like they didn't even jump a level. They just – play to the same performance.
Yeah.
And so I have no doubt that Grayson Rodriguez, like, his stuff will play in the majors. There's no doubt in my mind.
Right.
It's just
wasting that year.
Right. And I mean, we don't, and Michael Elias doesn't know what the new CBA will say. Like, maybe the CBA will get rid of that anyway.
Yep.
And there'll be no reason. And if that's the case, why wouldn't you have him there opening day? At least, and definitely right. Adley Rutschman. Well, Grayson Rodriguez, you could argue, maybe pitch limit and stuff. There's reasons to keep him down a little bit, but whatever.
But I think there's also the concept of bringing someone up to play on a loser, and you don't want to get in that losing mentality.
Right. And so how many – but at some point you got to call Adley Rutschman up.
Correct. Yes.
Even if they lose 100 games next year.
And that's, right? And that's where I'm interested to see Mike Elias in the offseason, because you need to prepare this team for Adley Rutschman. It's not Adley Rutschman and Grayson Rodriguez fix everything on this team. You have to prepare this team so that when you add these two guys, it's a spark.
Yeah. Hey, listen, you don't want to be the laughingstock again next year.
No.
And you don't have to be, because you're going to have some really talented players coming up. But as we've seen across baseball, you just see with Cedric Mullins, one really talented player makes very little difference. You need a bunch of talented players to really have an impact.
And I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on the Orioles to not be the laughingstock next year.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, what I'm curious, I don't think Michael Elias cares that much about that.
No.
I'm curious if there's any pressure on ownership.
Yeah,
I don't know. It was interesting, right? You mentioned, one more comment, and then I want to talk about Brandon Hyde and Michael Elias, but one more comment about what excites me is, as far as Adley Rutschman and them, they said there's co-minor league players of the year this year, Adley Rutschman and Kyle Stowers, and the Jim Palmer pitcher of the year was Grayson Rodriguez. And what excites me about that is all of those guys, Rutschman and Stowers and Grayson Rodriguez, are close to the majors. This is not some guy in single A who we won't see in 4 years winning an award as the best minor league player in the system. These are two guys in AAA, and Grayson Rodriguez, who's in AA and dominated in AA, who could all be up in the majors next year. So it's exciting to me that some of our best minor league prospects are now getting closer to actually being here.
Yeah. No, it's exciting. And the other thing from those awards is Buck Britton.
Yep.
And I think Buck Britton, for me, is starting to get as interesting to watch as the players. Not because he's a superstar, but how the Orioles use him working up in the system. They said manager Hyde's back next year. But I think Buck Britton might have the opportunity for this team in the future. When they're looking for a young guy to take this team to the next level, why not a guy who's worked with all these young players that are now going to be your superstars?
Yeah, and I mean, from everything we've heard, Bowie has a great coaching staff. They've had nothing but success.
Right.
And winning there. And Josh, I thought it was weird. The Brandon Hyde thing, I don't, it's whatever. You want to bring him back, bring him back. But first of all, it irritates me this idea that I think fans think that he can lose 162 games and you can just say, oh, he has no talent, so it's okay to lose 162 games, which I don't understand. Like, at some point you have to say that's too much losing, even on a really bad team. And I judge it based on what, I mean, it's really hard to judge the effectiveness of a manager, right?
Well,
like, I don't know.
Devin, here's what I look at. It's not how many games you lose, it's how you lose. The fact that they lost this game this weekend, giving up 8 runs in the 9th or whatever they did, something like that, 5 or 8 or something, all in the 9th inning, that looks bad on the manager to me. I think it's those moves that you haven't lost the clubhouse, and that's good. But is it because there's no one in the clubhouse that has earned their spot to stand up to you?
Yeah, I mean, and another thing I look at is, I mean, it seems like the players, I don't know, it seems like the players like him and are still playing for him, playing hard. But
right.
We were projected to win 63 and a half games, according to Vegas.
Yeah,
you lost all that money. Maybe I'm just bitter because I lost all this money. Maybe I'm just bitter about it. But I'm like, but that's the expectation, right? And 63 is not a ton of games. Yeah. We're going to fall way short of that 63 mark.
Yeah.
Which is another sign.
We could be 13 games under it. That's bad.
Yeah. Off of what was already a low benchmark.
Yeah.
But the other weird thing about the contract was, and again, I'm fine to bring them back, but I also think it's fair to criticize them. But it's interesting, right, that they decided last offseason, and it was just came out now that he was under contract that was handled last offseason.
Well, that tells me two things. It tells me, one, the Orioles knew going into this season they weren't going to win.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And it tells me, and it also tells me, that doesn't mean they're not going to replace him this offseason. Just because your contract goes a certain distance doesn't mean you're safe.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it also has to do with what's happening in the background. How amenable is Brendan Hyde to all this voodoo that Mike Elias is about, whether it's the roster manipulation or whether it's the lineup construction. Right. I mean, I assume he's, and how he used the bullpen, I assume he has a ton of input from Mike Elias and the analyst teams there. And I'm sure, I would imagine Brandon Hyde is kind of a yes man as far as that goes. I don't know.
I know we, as much as we love Buck, we know there was always tension between him and Duquette.
Yeah, he was not a yes man. He'll do his own thing. Yeah.
So, manager Hyde is definitely a yes man.
Yeah.
But again, for me, it's keep an eye on Buck Britton. See if they promote him next year or if they keep him in Bowie.
Yeah.
See what they do with the minor league coaching staff, because our major league coaching staff sucks. The bullpen coach sucks. The pitching coach sucks. The hitting coach sucks. They should all be replaced. None of them stand out.
Yeah, and Chris Holt is the new pitching coach this year, and you got to take some responsibility for that. Maybe put him back in the position he was before with just pitching development.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I feel like the staff around Michael, I mean, around Brandon Hyde gets mixed up every year.
Right.
But Michael Elias remains constant.
Yeah. And I don't know how you grade these people. Like I review my employees or employees I manage, and I have a little chart I got to fill out every year about giving them grade ratings 1 through 5 on like 10 different topics. And then it all adds up to a score with whether they get a raise or not, basically. And then it's all notes so that when I meet with them and go over notes on here's how you can improve. I don't know how you can judge this staff and manager Hyde for that matter, because you're judging them with the talent he has, but there's nothing. What do you lean on to say, hey, you did a great job here? Where has this team, where the bright spots on this team are Cedric Mullins? Okay. John Means didn't get better. He kind of just continued what he was. Trey Mancini's a story on his own. That's got nothing to do with your coaching staff. What are some bright spots that you can look at and congratulate the coaching staff?
Yeah, but how much the other side of that is, how much control specifically does a manager have in the improvement of an individual performance from year to year, right? Like,
but that's the whole point of the coaching staff.
Well, that's the staff around, yes, Brendan Hyde, which they mix up every year to very little.
And that's what I'm saying. As far as manager Hyde, I think the number one role for the manager is team chemistry and keeping the locker room and keeping guys together and excited. I think you see that. That's why I love John Harbaugh over on the Ravens. Because he is a player's coach. He has that team all together. It's one-on-one. I love that. Because you're right. The manager doesn't make decisions. The manager isn't out there telling guys to adjust their batting stance or their pitch release. That's where he's got to rely on his coaching staff. And the coaching staff didn't excite me last year, doesn't excite me this year. I want to go back to before Michael Elias came, and we kept hearing about Alan Mills and how all the pitchers love Alan Mills. And they never gave him that chance because they just revamped the whole system for Michael Elias. So I want to hear positive things about coaching staffs, and I haven't heard it about the Orioles.
Right, sure. I think that's fair. And the other side of that argument, though, is, like, we just played a game called reliever or wing sitcom character. Like, we're dealing with a bunch of knuckleheads who have no major experience, who, if we just want to look at the numbers, we got in the bullpen, 63, right, 87, 86. Like, this is where we are with our bullpen, 79.
But
a position player is not much better. Like, Kelvin Gutierrez, I don't care who his hitting coach is and what kind of stance he has and where he puts his hand on in the bat, that kid is not hitting like a major league player for any team under any coaching staff. So
I know, but you can't judge it by the guys who are here just this week. You have to judge it on the players who have been with the Orioles the entire season. You got to go to some of the bullpen guys like Tanner Scott, Paul Fry, other guys I'm blanking on, and how they progressed over the season.
Yeah. Also, can we just say, I don't understand how contracts work. I felt like in sports, a coach signs a contract and it's announced. This coach has a 3-year, $10 million contract.
Yeah.
But it feels like that's not how it works with the Orioles. You find out if a guy was extended in the offseason. And, like, is manager Hyde under contract for 1 year?
No. Teams are always quiet about managers. How long is John Harbaugh's contract?
No, but they made a big announcement 2 years ago about it, right?
No.
They made a huge announcement about his extension.
About whose?
John Harbaugh's extension.
I don't think they did.
Yes, it was a big story.
I don't think they gave a number.
They did.
Here's the deal. You never tell a manager, you never announce when a manager's contract is up because you're afraid that affects the clubhouse. You always say your manager's here another year. You fire them a year before their contract's up because you don't want to hit September and the players say, oh, well, this guy's on his way out. So you never hear teams announce this person's contract is up at the end of this year. You just don't hear it.
How come I Google John Harbaugh contract and there's a bunch of articles about Jim Harbaugh's contract with Michigan?
Because you don't hear it for professional teams.
Here it goes. Ravens coach John Harbaugh signs a new four-year deal.
When?
9 through 2022.
Okay. My guess is this is 2021. My guess is second half of the season, they're going to start asking John about a contract extension. And John's going to say, I'm not talking about that now, but the reporters are going to ask because they're always looking to not go into your final year of a contract for a coach.
Right. Sure. Because you're kind of a lame duck then. What about Mike Elias? What's his contract?
Does GM have a contract?
As far as I know, Mike Elias is working for free and has no contract.
I mean, he gets paid, but I don't think
he has any. How much, Josh? How much does he get paid?
$10 for every win.
He's the highest paid new GM in the history of baseball.
Okay. So what's
But we don't know how much.
What's he
We don't know for how long. He could have a 100-year contract. He could be done this year. No one knows. Isn't that a little bit weird?
I don't know. I don't think this stuff's public.
All right.
I thought someone else search another GM's contract. I don't think it's public. I mean, I don't. Who is it? Jeff Luhnow for the Cardinals? I don't think we know what his contract is. Sig Meidel, I don't think we know what his contract is. We only know players because of the players' union.
All right. I mean, I don't know. We can go through and Google all these names and see if who has contracts announced. So maybe it's normal. I don't know.
I don't know. I don't remember. Knowing that Dan Duquette's contract was coming up or whatever. I don't remember that. That is a conversation. You never hear about when you hear about a team's payroll.
Alexopoulos, I just Googled it, 4-year contract with Atlanta. So, I mean, it happens sometimes. That's just one I Googled, but.
All right. But yeah, you never hear, like, when they talk about the salaries of teams. The Orioles have a horrible salary, obviously.
Yeah, but there was a nice tweet by Buster Olney saying there are currently no active players under contract for next year.
Yes.
Zero. Right. Zero players under contract for next year.
Yeah.
Zero players.
Yeah, I know.
Chris Davis, but he's not an active player.
He's not, and he's retired. Yeah. There's yeah. So.
No.
I don't know, but I was going to say.
You may have no players next year.
Yeah, well, no players, that'd be funny. But you never hear about, they always talk about, oh, the Orioles salary is $40 million or whatever, smallest in baseball. They don't take into account, and here's the Orioles. It's all about the Orioles payroll, and all they count is the players. They don't count in that payroll the behind-the-scenes staff, the GM, the coaches, the analytics, the ticket takers. They don't take the entire business like you would a normal company. If you want to look at the payroll of how much money GM pays or Apple pays, it's going to be every employee at that company. When a baseball team makes an announcement, it's only about the players on the field.
Yeah, but I don't know. Like I think a lot of people know how much our superintendent makes, even if they don't know how much the teachers make. And I think it's – and I know, like, that our superintendent is on a 3-year contract. I think it's normal to have people who run businesses, CEOs and stuff, to have some sort of contract length. And you're right. Maybe you never get to the last year of the deal. It's always extended. But you still know what they're making and how long they're extended for. But we have no even, like, ballpark range of how much Michael Elias's contract is worth or how long he's there for. But you're right. I don't know. Maybe you're right. Maybe this is normal operating procedures. But I felt like that was not the case with Dan Duquette. I felt like that wasn't the case with Buck Showalter. I feel like this is a new thing, not revealing contract length or like. And how much does Brandon Hyde make? I don't know. Too much, probably. That's how much Brandon Hyde makes.
Right. Now I tried to pull up some announcements when Michael Elias started, and it's all about how he's got a big challenge ahead of him, but there isn't anything about a contract year or a price tag or anything.
And even the Hyde was like, the Hyde was a non-disclosed contract extension. And what is that?
I mean, I think it's common. I don't know.
Right.
We'll see. I mean, I'm interested to see Michael Elias. I mean, he started in 2018. I want to see what he's going to do. I think it took him 5 years.
Assuming his contract is for, does not run out at the end of the season. Yeah.
Yeah. Assuming his contract. I mean, I'm also annoyed that he is 38 years old.
That just makes me bitter, yeah.
I know. He was born in 82, yeah. So that just annoys me.
Yeah, it's annoying.
But it's also, at the same time, it's like, come on, Mike, just come on 336. We're your peers. We're your same age.
Yeah, we can talk about wings together.
Exactly. We can set you up with your own game.
Yeah, whatever sitcoms you like. We can talk about that, yeah.
Yeah, we'll pull out another game from a show from the early 90s.
We can talk Seinfeld, absolutely.
Exactly.
All right. You ready to get out of here?
Did we cover everything? Andrew Hyde, 30 for 30, Minor League Awards. Yeah, I think we did. Yeah, that would that took care of, and wings, of course.
And wings, yeah, got to the relievers. Yeah, I mean, this is the last week of Orioles baseball, so we're playing some spoilers. Let's do some spoiler nonsense.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun. I mean, yeah, I guess next week starts our episodes of looking forward to 2022.
Yep, we can talk all about, you're right.
Offseason, free agents, all that stuff starts next week.
Mike Elias said Grace Marigas and Adley Rutschman have a chance to make it out of spring training to make the open day roster. We'll talk about that every single week till we get our hopes up, and then it won't happen. So that's going to be good.
Uh-huh. So.
All right.
All right, let's get out of here. Nothing else going on.
You can follow us on Facebook and go to iTunes, give us a 5-star review. You can support us. Hey,
you want a PlayStation update?
I wasn't gonna bring it up.
You know, I wasn't gonna either, but I was just thinking, do I need to update? Here's the update.
Yeah.
Because the update has to do with this week.
All right.
I told the guy, he told me Friday, Saturday, and Sunday it was coming, never came.
Right.
I told him October 1st is the deadline. I'm done. October 1st, you're giving me my money back if I don't have the PlayStations.
Ooh,
so that is Friday night. So that means for the next episode, I will either have a stack of PlayStations here next to me, or I will have my cash back.
A stack of cash.
Or a stack of cash. Yep. So next week, big announcement.
Okay. And if you get the cash back, you're going to put it, because you're going to lose out on some money because you didn't flip your PlayStation. So you're going to put all that money on the Ravens to beat the Broncos, and then you'll make all that money back that you're going to make anyway on the Broncos-Ravens game. Boom.
Yeah, it's not bad. I don't know. Might want to save some of it for the following week with the Colts.
I'd rather bet on the Colts.
It's in Baltimore. That's where I'll put all my PlayStation money on the Ravens.
Yeah, do that. That's a safer bet.
So either way.
All right. So that's exciting. Something's gonna happen next episode. We'll lead with a PlayStation update next week. We'll lead with it.
Maybe.
Okay, because I'm gonna be itching the whole time to know.
I'll let you know. I might have something better to announce next week. So we'll see. But it'll be a fun episode next week. Make sure you tune in. Make sure you go on over to iTunes and give a nice review.
We also got it next week. I don't know if we know next week or 2 weeks. Got to go over our bold predictions. See how well we did.
Oh, I forgot about those. I'm going to have to bring those up. Yeah. You haven't looked at the bold predictions, have you?
No, but I remember a couple of mine, and I'm way off.
I don't remember any of mine.
I remember I just had one about the Orioles will have so many pitchers with an ERA under 3. No one batting under 3. Get out of here. Chris Ellis, maybe. But I don't know if he's pitching up innings to qualify.
Yeah.
But yeah, write us on iTunes. Give us 5 stars. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter at Section336Show. You can follow me on Twitter at Section336. And you can follow Josh on Twitter
at Josh Soroka.
Thank you for listening, boys and girls. And as always, go O's and go Ravens. And we run this town. When we step into the yard, we must protect this house. The other Panthers, haven't you heard? Got that underdog style, but we'll be crushing the curve. And we really don't care what the haters say. We'll be rocking from the city to the Chesapeake Bay. The other Panthers, and we run this town.